This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, I'm Sumitra Selvaraj, and this is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture. Consultant orthopaedic surgeon Dr. Harjeet Singh has been missing in action. We missed him in the October edition of his monthly clinic on sports medicine, but I'm going to put that down to the Deepavali festivities. When he was here last at the end of September, we were talking about recovering from injuries and getting back on your feet to the point of play. And it was such a good show. We were inundated by messages, so much so that I couldn't get through half the questions that I wanted to ask you, Dr. Harjeet. So he's here in the studio with me today, and we're going to be continuing our discussion on recovering from injuries. Welcome back, Dr. Harjeet.
Thank you very, very much. I needed a break after all those questions. And you know what they say, right? A little bit of absence sometimes is a good thing.
Okay, so let's just have a quick look at when you were here last, right? We went through what common sports injuries looked and felt like, when to seek treatment and also who to seek treatment from. Perhaps what we can do to start is quickly recap when to seek treatment.
Okay, it always depends on the kind of injury that you have. A lot of us get small niggly injuries, which we accumulate over time. Mm-hmm. And if these injuries start troubling us and increasing in intensity, most of the time it's a signal by the body that we need to get some help. Mm. Now, there's also the acute injury, something more severe. You've got a swollen joint, you've got increased pain, you are unable to move the part significantly or put weight on the joint if it's the lower limb. Mm. Now, those kind of scenarios do signal that, okay, you might as well get it looked at by someone to make sure that it's something that needs something more than the normal ice pack, a bit of pain relief. Mm. But if you feel that the injury is just a knock, you're a bit sore, and it seems to get better after about 24 hours with simple over-the-counter medication, putting an ice pack, resting it out a bit, then I think it's a safer injury to self-treat.
Right.
But when in doubt, it's better to get help. I think that's the way we go.
So is pain a good indication or pain a good indicator?
Yeah, most of the time, the pain threshold of people differ. Mm. Okay, but everyone knows the kind of pain that they can take and the kind of pain that actually signifies trouble for them. Mm. So pain, we use pain most of the time at practice and in the hospital as a marker of the severity of injury. Mm. But if individuals coming in with differing pain thresholds, that can be a little bit more vague. But I think for person to person, pain is. If the pain is severe, go get help.
Okay, so we're definitely going to get into this idea of pain a little bit later in the show. But first, the second part of my first question is, who to seek treatment from first? And I know that as an orthopedic consultant, your answer is going to be quite biased, but let me know what you think.
Okay, now, you see, everyone has a general practitioner in the neighborhood, which can be the first go-to person. Mm. A lot of us feel that when they get a sporting injury and they are sporty, they want to immediately cone down to someone who can identify the problem.
Right.
Then seeing someone who does sports medicine, whether it's a sports medicine physician or a sports medicine orthopedist, does help you cone down things better. Mm. A lot in Malaysia would go to the neighborhood sensei.
Yes.
Yes. Most of the time, the senseis that, or the traditional healers that I come in contact with, they are also mindful in the sense that if they are not sure, they send them over to us.
Good. That's mindful, right?
There's also the role of the therapist. Mm. Now, if the injury is more chronic, people tend to go to a therapist first, see whether they are able to work the problem away. And if it doesn't, we generally get the referrals. Mm. So it's okay to go to anyone who you're comfortable with, but you know, you have to ensure that you get proper treatment.
Okay. So, and in the last show, we really did go through many of the different kind of treatment options available. What I want to now go into is really the recovery process, because what we're going to be talking about today is this whole idea of returning to point of play, right? So I remember in the last show when I asked you what a person can expect from the recovery process, you said that there's a need to taper expectations because fixing an injury is not like fixing a car. It's not like putting a carburetor in.
Yeah, because you never get a uniform process of recovery.
Mm.
There are a lot of variables which change by the moment, by the process of recovery, that then define how the ultimate recovery is going to be.
Mm.
So from the word go, we tend to get the patient's expectations discussed.
Right.
And then we do tell them that what it's going to take to get them to that point.
Mm.
And when necessary, and we are unable to do that, I do lay it out from the word go. But that does dampen their enthusiasm. So I do tell them that that's good enough to do this, 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 and this is what you're not going to be able to do. But there's so much more that you will be able to do and enjoy whatever you want to do.
Okay,
so
perhaps you can just quickly break down the science for me then. You know, what does the healing of an injured tissue entail?
Okay.
And specifically, I'd like to know from a timeline perspective.
Okay, so from the point of injury, there is a process of inflammation and repair.
Right.
Okay. Inflammation occurs immediately up to the first 2 weeks or so.
Mm.
And this is the process that we tend to be able to modify with medication and therapy. So we can quieten down an inflamed or injured joint, to put it simply, with the initial physiotherapy, cryotherapy, the ultrasound methods, resting the part, splinting it with a brace. And that gives the body time to sort of like calm down.
Okay.
Now, once it's calmer, we tend to try to get it back to what it's supposed to be. Then we move on to therapy, which involves flexibility and strength.
Mm.
Okay. And as this continues on, okay, we work on very modalities which involve movement, bringing them to function.
Okay.
Now, that's where it sometimes stops for, you know, people who are just weekend warriors and not interested to the next step. So if you push them further, then you go into sports-specific exercises where they are brought through, you know, very, very niche activities to bring them to the sports that they like. So it's a long process.
Right.
That long process takes almost about maybe 9 to 10 months.
Wow.
Yeah. And this does not differ between an elite athlete or a weekend warrior.
But you see them, you see the elite athletes back on the courts within months sometimes.
Yeah,
less.
So it does depend on the severity of injury.
Does their baseline strength or fitness play a part?
Okay, probably what they have is they have a high level of a base. High level of base.
Okay.
So, but the thing is, the biology of healing, the initial biological response to injury, it's almost the same. They get treated appropriately from the word go.
Right.
So they have that time factor immediately in.
And it's constant supervision.
Yes. So their job is to get back to sports.
Right.
Yeah. You don't play football, you're not going to get paid.
Right.
So 24/7 during the period of rehabilitation and recovery, they are totally on.
Sure. Unlike the rest of us, you know, if we hurt our knee, my concern is still whether the house is going to get mopped.
Yeah. I think we would probably ask, okay, I would like to recover and get back to sports, but first tell me, how long would it get for me to get back to work?
Right.
Right. So for them is get back to work, it's sports. So it's a bit easier, I guess, or more difficult.
Okay, so does gender or age play a part in recovery at all?
Now, surprisingly, the process of recovery is similar between males and females.
Okay.
Okay, the biological process is similar.
Mm-hmm.
As we age, we tend to lose flexibility and muscle bulk. But the processes are the same. The timeline might just differ a bit.
Okay. All right. You'll be delighted to know that we've already had WhatsApp questions flying in. Okay. So we're going to take that after the break. We're just going to go for a quick break first. When we return, we'll pick up the conversation on recovering from injuries with Dr. Harjit Singh, who's consultant orthopedic surgeon. You're more than welcome to send us your questions via Twitter at BFM Radio or via WhatsApp 01878988899 or by calling us at 03773 2900. This is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. I'm Sumitra Selvaraj, and this is our monthly sports medicine clinic for health and living on the bigger picture. Consultant orthopedic surgeon and traumatologist Dr. Harjit Singh is helping us understand how to recover successfully from injuries so that we can return to the point of play. We're also taking your questions via Twitter at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 01878988899, or you can call us at 03773 2900. I did say to you, WhatsApp questions are coming in quick and fast. We better take some of them before we get overwhelmed again. So here's question number one from Chan. He says that he has a torn ACL and it was replaced using a hamstring tendon 2 years ago, but his leg muscle is still unable to be equally sized. Daily, he does feel the knee and he thinks that it's hurting and therefore that it isn't well. Is there any chance at all to be normal or at least to improve from the current situation?
Yeah, Chan, that's a great question, and I think it's something that a lot of my patients go through. When you undergo ACL surgery with a hamstring graft, most of the time it's not an isolated ACL injury.
Mm-hmm.
You normally do have some meniscal or cartilage damage at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And the rehabilitation is of utmost importance to bring you back to not feeling the knee or feeling that it's getting better. That mm-hmm. happens usually about a year and a half.
Okay.
Now, the idea is to ultimately get that last 5% or 10% that I call the mojo back to play.
Mm.
You need a lot of sport-specific or very individualized exercises.
Right.
Now, comparing both muscle bulk is usually not the way to go.
Oh, okay.
We tend to use a lot of objective assessments of strength.
Mm.
Measuring it, you tend to get about a centimeter difference, and that persists over a longest period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, I had a patient that I operated on who ultimately brought the operated leg's bulk bigger than the other, mm-hmm. and he says that he doesn't know how he did it. I think it's just the rehab.
Okay.
So the idea is, in your scenario, after 2 years, if it's an isolated anterior cruciate ligament reconstruction without meniscus or cartilage damage,
mm-hmm.
moving on to very sports-specific activities, getting a good trainer will help you and you will come back.
Okay. I like what you said about objective assessment. We've got another WhatsApp question in. I broke my tibia in 2014, underwent the knife and currently fitted with an implant. I think I am fully recovered by now. Should I remove my interlocking implant?
Yeah, I think that's a question for you to discuss with the treating physician. But this is my take. When I treat children, okay, I tend to be favorable towards taking off the implant.
Mm-hmm.
It depends also on the part that we treat. Now, if we cone down to the tibia and you have an interlocking nail
mm-hmm.
done, well fixed, and it's no trouble at all, some surgeons would discuss non-removal of the nail,
mm-hmm.
especially if it's embedded a bit deeper and it's going to cause problems to take it out.
Right.
If you're going to do it, there is also a timeline where it's easier to do.
Mm.
If it's about 2 years and you have bone growing over the nail, then sometimes we tell you that we can attempt to take the nail off, but we might even fail to remove it.
Right.
So if you're doing fine and your surgeon feels that, you know, it's fixed in a way that it's going to be difficult to remove, then you have to discuss the challenge with him.
Okay. Good advice as always. We've got Brian on the line who's got a question for you, Dr. Harjit, about his bicep tendon, which is inflamed. We're just going to take this call from Brian right now. Good afternoon, Brian. You're with Sumitra and Dr. Harjit. Could I have your question, please? Hi, Brian, can you hear me?
Yes, yes. Hello, can
yes.
you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly fine.
Right, okay, yes. So I went to the gym 3 years ago. I mean, I've been going, an avid goer. three times a week, three, mm-hmm. four times a week, and I was perfectly fine. And then there's one day I had a, I think they call it a labrum tear.
Okay.
I think I call it a slap vision. And so I went for a surgery, and a slap tear surgery. And then my doctor told me that my bicep tendon, long-haired tendon, is still inflamed.
Okay.
So I had it last December, and it's almost a year now, and it's still a bit pain. I'd like to know how can I go about and how long is it to heal for the long-haired bicep tendon, which is inflamed.
Thank you for your question, Brian. Dr. Harchit will address that on air shortly. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Bye for now.
So if we look at the biceps tendon, the long head of biceps involves the shoulder joint.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for those of us who are not very familiar about a slap tear. Now, that long head of biceps actually attaches to the part of the glenoid which forms the shoulder joint.
Okay.
Right on the upper part. It's called the superior labrum. At times, that gets injured.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, not too bad. Requiring therapy and you're fine. Sometimes you need to surgically repair it. Now, repairing it is one part of the story, but getting you back, it's the other part. The shoulder is one of the joints which gain its stability from the muscles around it. It's not like the hip. The hip is like your KFC cup going into a deep bowl, so it's very stable by structure, but the shoulder is less stable,
right?
But it has a greater range of motion. Okay, so that's the start of it. Now, after surgery, you tend to have the shoulder functioning a bit abnormally because it's weaker,
right?
And it gets stiffer.
Mm.
So the head of the arm bone, which is the humerus, doesn't keep center within the glenoid. Now, that sometimes causes the long head of biceps to persistently get inflamed, causing more pain. So okay. Although you may have a successful surgery repairing the slap tear, you get persistent pain in the front.
So is it permanent?
You need to get the head centralized. So there are specific exercises working not only on the joint between the glenoid and the arm, the humerus, but also working on your scapula,
okay.
which is the stabilizer for the whole joint per se, and that tends to weaken out and is often missed in rehab. So once you stabilize the scapula, the three-dimensional movement gets better and your bicep settles down.
Okay.
If it doesn't, then you probably need more done on the biceps, including injections or surgery.
Okay.
But I think that you need to probably look at this. Most of the time, you call it scapulohumeral dysfunction. Some big mumbo-jumbo meaning that the movement at the shoulder in a three-dimensional outlook is not perfect yet.
Mm. Okay.
So persist. You will be okay.
Brian, I hope that answers your question. So, Dr. Harchit, we've been talking a lot about recovering from injuries, right? Can I now just move into re-injury? What if you've injured your knee once before? And how likely is it that you will re-injure it? And what is your recovery like in a re-injury?
Okay. If everything is done appropriately and you are back to play, if you injure your anterior cruciate ligament, the chances of re-injury is almost the same as the other leg. Okay. Having said that, occasionally the re-injury that you get does not involve the reconstructed ligament, but it involves some other part, maybe the meniscus or the cartilage.
And
that can happen.
Why would that be?
A lot of us, when we get back to play, there are two groups that sort of like form out. One is the one that's persistently afraid of re-injury, and they then don't go in for, you know, the aggressive movements and all, and they are technically protected.
The more cautious ones.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the ones who are more afraid of getting injured. And then the other ones who...
Are the ones who behave like 14-year-olds and throw themselves onto a field.
Not really. I think the other ones who went through the whole thing, went through sport-specific training, got back to a higher level of sports, maybe back to the level that they were in before, they are just unfortunate to get injured again.
Right.
A lot of times, those who come to me, I tell them that the chances of you injuring that would have been the same as the other knee, so you were just unlucky.
Right.
Because a lot of them come back to me, the operated leg is totally fine and now they have ruptured the other side.
Mm.
So when that happens in rehab, we also tend to look at other factors of injury.
Mm.
You know, you could have had a movement at the hip joint, which is a bit more different and inappropriate, muscle weakness there, which brought you to a higher risk of re-injury.
Okay, so earlier on we were talking a little bit about how people respond to injury and recovery, right? Whether there were any factors that came into play. The one thing I didn't ask you was whether any existing medical conditions that they have could affect their recovery from injury.
Yeah, I think tissue healing is always affected by the general condition of the body.
Okay.
Now, the first one, if you are diabetic, we tend to worry about the wounds a little bit more. So we tend to have the control of your diabetes much better to prevent any problems. Now, barring that, if you have heart disease and your endurance and activity levels are not on par with someone who's not having any problems, the rehab is tailored and slower to get you back to some amount of activity, but it's going to be a longer process.
Right.
So we do tailor it a bit.
Okay.
And sometimes we do find, okay, if you are overweight, you're not of optimum weight and you want to get back to sports, I tend to, you know, tell them to calm down a bit, get recovered, go to cardio, get your, you know, weight optimal before you go back to any sport. So I think we do tailor it individually.
Okay. Let's move on to a question which I think is at the top of mind for many people, but they don't usually ask it. What happens when you ignore injury?
Okay. Okay. Don't ignore it. I lose a job. Okay. But that's a good question. A lot of patients come up to me and ask me that. It depends on the severity of your injury, one. It depends on your expectation to recovery and what you want to do.
Mm.
Now, if you are very sporty and you rupture your ACL and you love your basketball, there is no other way except surgery. Full stop. If you are desk-based and sports is not so important, you got injured in a corporate game and it's only your anterior cruciate ligament without cartilage or meniscus damage, and you are happy to stop playing football or basketball, instead cycle and swim, you'll be okay. If you have a scenario where the doctor says, okay, we can watch and see,
right,
and you ignore your injury, the body will give you a signal saying that I'm not happy. One, if you have pain which increases when you use the joint. Like you have a meniscus tear, small, tiny one. A lot of them are walking around without pain, but you're the one that, you know, you do a bit more, it starts swelling up. You don't notice it, but you feel that the knee is tight.
Mm.
So you obviously, your body is not happy and you need something done. Okay. You ignore it further, that tear becomes worse or it gives second effects to the cartilage. So you're stuck. Now, second is increasing pain. Now, increasing pain with activities which did not cause pain before is another indicator that you cannot ignore the injury.
Mm.
But there are a lot of injuries which we ignore and the patients do well. So to give you a specific scenario, it's difficult, but I tend to tell them, listen to your body.
Mm.
You want to ignore this? Fine. You do an activity and it doesn't cause you problem? Fine. Keep to your follow-up anyway, but in between, if there's anything where you got more pain and there's swelling of the joint, please come back faster.
Okay, since you mentioned swelling of the joints, I'm going to jump in with a question that's come in on WhatsApp, slightly related, but this has to do with actually arthritis. Leng says that mum has got arthritis in the finger joints. The joints are swollen and painful. What can she do?
Okay, now the first thing is the term arthritis just... It defines that there is inflammation of the joint.
Okay.
It does not tell you the etiology of that inflammation. Okay. Whether it's osteoarthritis, which is generally overuse wear tear, or it's some other inflammatory arthritis, a general problem attacking the joints in a person.
Mm-hmm.
But if we take the simple osteoarthritis, when the joints are painful, you tend to lose function.
Mm.
Okay, and sometimes simple anti-inflammatories and rest makes the pain go away. I have a lot of patients who come and show me that my joints look funny, but they are functioning very well. So the functional capacity in the fingers and the hand is of utmost importance instead of just going by how the joints look. So when you have a painful condition, we have to deal with the pain, get down to the source of the pain, and get you back to good function. It doesn't matter how the joints look.
Since we're on the subject of pain, should you be exercising when you're in pain? I know this is a question that divides a lot of people.
Yeah, I think no. If you have an acute injury or a overuse injury over time,
mm-hmm.
and exercise causes some discomfort which you can take, and you accept that or you're in denial, as you exercise further, the discomfort doesn't get worse. Maybe it's okay and safe, okay? But if exercising causes increasing pain, you can't, you shouldn't. Now, a lot of times we are mindful of the injuries that we have. That means we have seen someone, he tells you that, oh, you've got a bit of tendinitis at the elbow, and you continue doing the exercise, and it causes a bit of discomfort, you put an ice pack, and it's okay. The next day you exercise again, and it's almost the same.
Right.
Now, you have already got a diagnosis. Someone has seen you. It's not a scary problem. And you accept that, hey, you know what? I'm going to live with this.
Mm.
So that's okay. But if you got a scenario that exercising causes excruciating pain, you need it sorted out.
Okay, so on this note of excruciating, and you mentioned it earlier as well, right? What you can accept as pain. What if people's thresholds towards pain are different?
Yeah, so when I was younger, I used to always be very mindful of all these scoring systems that we have. Oh, 1 to 10, you're smiling at 0 and 1, and
right.
you're crying at 10. But finally, I realized if someone comes to me and said, I have excruciating pain with a smiling face, I just considered excruciating pain. See, the idea is you're supposed to treat the patient, not the scale. So,
okay.
I'm telling you that I've got pain. Okay, you have to remove other things, secondary reasons like, okay, employment gain, secondary gain, some insurance issues, some medico-legal, points, that may change the game. But all given equal, if you come to me and you say, Doc, I really have pain at my knee and it's horrible. I will take it. I'll just take it. I will try and isolate what's happening and then we speak further.
Okay.
So, but on the other hand, yeah, different people do have different thresholds of pain, but that's what they're feeling now, so we just go with it.
So because we're on this path of consultation and speaking plainly and directly to the patient who's come to you, right, is it possible at all that a treatment can make things worse?
Yes, it can. If treatment doesn't go, I think there are two ways it can make things worse.
Mm.
One, your diagnosis is wrong. So whatever you do is going to make things worse. Because now you're dealing with something which was totally not causing any problems and you have messed around with it. So
yep.
it gets worse. One more. Great intention, good diagnosis, but your treatment line was not appropriate for the problem.
Mm.
Okay, so there is an element of sometimes a minor problem being over-treated. Okay, bringing a patient through a long-drawn rehabilitative process that he possibly would not have needed. And that doesn't match the expectations that the patient had for the trouble that he went through.
Right.
So that's another way it's not going to be.
But that's a tough balance game,
yeah.
especially when the patient has come to you from another consultant.
Yeah, so when they come from another consultant, I normally am a little bit more conservative in my line of care and what I offer them. Unless I'm 100% sure that that's going to fix the problem, then I go for it. If I feel that I need to deal with the person's mind, because you've gone to someone and you're not happy and your brain is all in gibberish. I think something's going on there. Mm. So I calm them down, get them, you know, to sit down and both of us are on the same page, and then I offer them what they need. So when you're dealing with injury, you're not only dealing with an injured part, you're dealing with an injured person. So you work from the top to the bottom and get it sorted out.
Okay. Now, we're going to take another short break now, but when we return, we'll pick up the conversation on recovering from injuries. I want to talk a little bit more about this whole idea, the psychology of recovering from injuries as well. And we've still got a little bit of time for your questions via Twitter at BFM Radio or via WhatsApp at 018-789-8899, or you can call us at 0377-332900. I'm speaking to Dr. Harjit Singh, who's a consultant orthopaedic surgeon. This is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. This is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture. I'm speaking to consultant orthopaedic surgeon and traumatologist Dr. Harjit Singh about how to effectively recover from injuries. Dr. Harjit, just before the break, we were talking a little bit about this whole idea of people having to accept the fact that they are injured and what their kind of expectation of recovery as well is. Do you feel that people have a hard time accepting that they have been injured? And if so, why do you think they have a hard time?
I think they better have a hard time accepting it, because I would, you know. The first thing that we always go into is denial, right? I mean, why me? And then you go through the whole thing and then you get to acceptance. So my job is to bring them from wherever they are to acceptance as fast as possible, because until you accept that something's wrong, then we can proceed with getting you better.
So how do you do that? What's that process of getting them from the denial to acceptance?
You cannot be in a rush when you speak to them. There's a lot of listening involved. Mm. And they have to understand that no matter how you look, I mean, I don't look the best. So no matter how you look, how you seem or how you dress, you all of us have the best intention for that patient at that particular moment.
Right.
Okay. If you have a therapist that's going to meet the patient, the language that you speak, the path that you show has to be the same. You can't say that this will take you 6 months and your therapist says that it's going to take you 3. The patient gets confused.
Right.
So a confused, non-accepting patient is worse than a non-accepting patient. Mm. And once you have laid down this path, you have to follow it. That means the targets that you set, that you offer them, and you know the kind of recovery, they have to see some positivity over X period of time. It gives them great confidence to continue. You have to tell them things like the pain and swelling will make you uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Using crutches for the first time is going to be a joke. It's like tying a sari for the first time.
I wonder why you used that example. Yeah.
And, it's like me learning to tie a turban. I mean, it's horrible the first, and you get used to it over time. Mm. But you have to also show them that light at the end of the tunnel. Mm. And that's not necessarily going to be an oncoming train. There is going to be light. Just be patient and follow it.
Okay. But that's when you have the luxury of time.
No, you have to. When you want to treat, I mean, I'm in private practice, fairly busy, yes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you tend to pick the patients that, you know, this guy, if I'm going to help him, I need to give him a bit of time. Mm-hmm. So then I choose a time after lunch, less number of patients, especially if the referral is coming from a colleague. Mm. Then I'll say, okay, you do. Then send him in the morning. I'm going to be extremely busy.
Right.
And I just take that extra time, have a bit of coffee, relax, and then speak to him. So I think communication is the key. You can do fantastic work. I mean, you can be a fantastic doctor, but if you don't communicate it to the patient, they tend to get disjointed about things.
Okay. What are your thoughts on going for second opinions or even third opinions?
Oh, please. Now, if I have not been able to convey, I mean, you're not comfortable after speaking to me, I would rather you ask somebody else and he might say the same thing. Mm. And ultimately, if you're comfortable with him, then he's your doctor, not me. I mean, it's because, not about...
Because like you mentioned, recovering from a sports injury is a long-term process.
Yeah, I think, and the, you know, the concepts, the principles of treatment are the same. Mm. But ultimately, you have to be comfortable with the physician.
Mm.
See, there are scenarios where when I speak to the patient and the way they respond to me, sometimes I myself am not comfortable with them.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a two-way thing.
Correct.
And, you know, I've had times where I've operated on someone and he's fine with me, but when I send him to the therapist, they have a lot of trouble with him there or him or her there. So then I have to act like the bridge between. So there's a lot of human factors inside. But, you know, going for a second, third, fourth opinion, I think you stop at four. I mean, but going for several opinions and then getting comfortable with the option offered to you by the person that you're most comfortable with is the best thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
After all, it's your body.
True. So we've got a little bit of time left. I want to just wrap it up, you know, based on your area of expertise, right? How much has the field of injury management actually evolved over the years compared to maybe the early years of your career?
Okay, I think it's evolved a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay, previously we were concentrating on a lot on treating the injury per se.
Mm-hmm.
Then we moved to treating the person. Then now we move to preventing injury. If you look at rehab, previously, rehab came in once we treated someone and then we send them to rehab. Now, there is something called prehab.
Right.
That means you prime the patient after an injury for the rehab that he's going to probably go through way before I operate on him.
Mm.
I think that's just the clinical part of it. The techniques, the implants that we do, the recovery, the methods, everything has been changing. And it's tiring because you have to constantly read. So if you want to be at the top of a game, you have to constantly evolve. So if you don't evolve, you'll just be left behind.
That's what makes you a good consultant.
Yeah, it makes my beard white.
Dr. Harjit, we've talked a lot over the last two episodes, not just our show today, but even our show in late September, about this whole idea of recovering from injuries and being able to get your body back to the point of play, because that's what we want, right? We want to be able to return to a quality of life that we once enjoyed before.
Yes.
So what would your top tips be to remain healthy, perhaps even be less injury prone, or if you prefer, even how to prevent injury?
Yeah, so I always feel prevention is better than cure.
Mm-hmm.
You have to define the kind of sport that you're going to get into and where you are athletically at that moment. So you build yourself and keep the risk manageable. One, when you get injured, get good care and get care fast.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing is getting you back to whatever you like or love to do is our holy grail all the time.
Mm.
But sometimes you cannot get there. Sometimes we cannot offer you 100% cure, but we can get you somewhere close. A little bit of modification will also make you happy. So I think that you cannot prevent injury 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But you can definitely get better.
Excellent. Okay, that's a fantastic note to wrap it up on. Thank you, Dr. Harjit, for joining us once again today and clearing up our doubts on recovering from injuries. See you again next month.
Yes,
I have no idea what we're going to be talking about yet, but I'm sure we're going to figure it out. I've been speaking to consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Harjit Singh about how to recover successfully from injuries so that you can return to the point of play. If you've got any ideas for us as to what you'd like to hear next on our Sports Medicine Clinic, please do drop us a line. You can find us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. And you would love to hear from you as always. This has been Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.